This Is Your Life, Season 2, Episode 13. Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name is Michelle Cashat. I'm your co-host, and I'm in the studio today with Michael Hyatt. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Michelle.
You know, this is my favorite episode of every season.
I think it is mine, too.
There's something about, well, I should tell people what it is. Since I just said it's mine. It's our Q&A episode, where we literally go through the questions that have come in over the last couple months, and we pick some of the very best, some of our favorite questions, and we just kind of go through as many as we possibly can during our time together.
And the reason I like it is because I don't look, as you know, at the questions beforehand. So it's a little bit of, it's like Russian roulette.
It is. And I could be totally making up random questions that have nothing to do with leadership or personal development and just throw them at you and you wouldn't know any different.
And kind of the edge factor, the fear is that you'll ask me something that's like really personal or something I don't know the answer to.
Speaking of.
So yeah. So
that's now that you said that.
Part of the fun.
Okay, I'll try to be careful. No, I won't. We're just going for it. You
go,
ready?
Let's just go for
it. Okay, let's do it. First question came from Al Gettler of Windham, New Hampshire. And he said this, after 100 podcasts and over 1,500 blog posts, and I don't even know the numbers, but about that, what are the top three things you've learned from your experience?
Wow.
That's
Well, first of all, Al's a personal friend.
Oh, okay.
And it's
Hi,
just
Al.
A terrific guy. So, Al, thank you for asking that question. I don't know that these are the top three, but just off the top of my head, one is the incredible importance of persistence.
Oh, yes.
There have been so many times I wanted to give up. But by the way, especially with this podcast, you know, you have added so much to this. But I can tell you, when I was trying to do it on my own, there's something about sitting down, looking at a microphone and not having an audience out there. It's just hard to grind through.
Mm-hmm.
And so my hat is off to every podcaster who does it that way, who doesn't have the benefit of a co-host or somebody that they can, you know, converse with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's added a lot. But persistence. I think that so much of success in life, it doesn't go to the people that are brilliant, you know, the people that are well-connected, but it goes to the people that are just willing to persist.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'll do that, you'll learn over time and you'll figure out what it takes to succeed. So I think that's one thing. I think maybe another thing that I've learned through all this is the importance of your audience.
Hmm.
The importance of really staying engaged with them and taking a posture of serving them. Because anytime you get that flipped and start thinking, anytime I've gotten it flipped and started thinking, you know, they're there to serve me. There's something I can extract from my audience. That's when it gets all wonky.
It does.
And where it goes downhill.
Well, the tone changes. Even if you don't realize it, the tone changes. They can feel it. But I think we lose some sense of enjoyment in what we're doing once that switches, too. There's something about that that just changes our attitude of the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I would say the third thing that I've learned is that there's just always room for improvement, that you have to continue to pursue what you do with the intention that you're going to surpass what you've done. So that I've never at least reached the place where I've said, oh, got that nailed.
No, I haven't either, just so you know.
I mean, usually when I complete a project, like we just recorded about 6 weeks ago, this next year's version of 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever, which in many ways we wouldn't have to re-record that, except that when I finished it last year, I said, oh, there's a bunch of things I want to do differently this next
okay.
year. And even though we finished that 6 weeks ago, now I'm already thinking about next year, how I want to do it differently. But I think to be committed to that process of never-ending improvement is important.
That's great. So the importance of persistence, the value of your audience to listen to and serve your audience, and then to remember that there's always room for improvement.
Yep.
Those are some pretty good lessons. I like it.
That's just off the top of my head.
All right. Next question came from Derek Ouellette. Hopefully I said that okay. From Ontario. Hi, my Canadian friends. Now, what is the best time to have live call seminars or live video seminars, Derek asked, during the day or evening or on a weekday versus a weekend? Is there one time that's better than another?
Well, there's not really a good answer to this if you have a global audience.
Mm.
You know?
True. That's the obvious, but I hadn't thought of it. You're absolutely right.
And so, you know, somebody's afternoon is somebody else's evening, mm-hmm. and I was very aware of this recently in my sabbatical to Europe, you know, that I was 7 hours ahead where I was, and so...
Even calling home is a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to think through that. I can tell you that at Platform University, for example, we used to do them in the evenings. And that would mean it was the middle of the night for people in Europe. And it wasn't, I don't know, we switched to doing it in the middle of the day, in the afternoon.
Okay.
And I think that's better. I don't know that there's a better day. I would just ask my audience.
Okay.
You know, it kind of goes back to respect your audience. But I would ask the audience what best serves them and be experimental with it. I don't think typically weekends are good, although I've kind of fantasized about having a Sunday evening show, live show, because that's kind of a time when people, you know, have some time to think. The weekend's kind of behind them. They're not preoccupied with the family.
Well, and some metrics say that's when people start to reengage with social media and get back online before their work week, that Sunday night can be a good time.
You can kind of see it on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all your friends had been busy with the family during the weekend.
Yes.
Suddenly they're back online on Sunday evening.
But like Friday night through Saturday or Sunday afternoon tends to be dead time. So that wouldn't be a good time necessarily.
No, and I can tell you just looking from my blog traffic, usually Mondays or Tuesdays are the best day to post. That's going to have the highest volume of traffic for me. And then it just kind of goes down during the week.
Yeah, I noticed the same. I read something recently that said Thursday was such a great day, but that seems to be an awful day. For Thursday, Friday seems to be terrible days for me as far as traffic. Monday, Tuesday are always the best.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Thanks for that question, Derek. Number three here. Aaron Odom said, the balance of growing and protecting your brand while helping others grow theirs. That's kind of the topic she wants to have you address. She says, I have a sizable Facebook community. When I post links for other bloggers, I've been told it helps their traffic go viral, but when that happens, my traffic falters. So I want to help, but I also want to protect my brand. Is there a way to find a balance?
There definitely is a way to find a balance. And the key is, and this is kind of my own rule, I don't post stuff unless I think it's going to be genuinely helpful to my audience. So even though I may be, you know, beholden to somebody else who's done me a favor, or they think they're entitled to a favor from me, unless it's going to help my audience. And by the way, I have violated this before, and usually to my own detriment.
Mm-hmm.
But it always works best when I see myself as a steward of the audience that I've been given.
Okay.
If I ever try to exploit that either for my own benefit or somebody else's benefit, I'm going to lose. Because if I do something, for example, here's a good example. As you know, I run occasionally guest posts on my blog. I don't do it as much anymore, but occasionally I still do it. Anytime I've done that as a favor to the blogger, but without, you know, clear benefit to my readers, I've suffered. It's dinged my brand, and it doesn't really help that blogger. So the first question I've got to ask, and the first filter that has to be passed, is does this add value to my existing audience?
So only serve the needs of your author, friend, or whoever that you're serving if it serves your audience as well.
But I tell you what, I do think it can also help. Because if you think that only your content adds value, I mean, first of all, it's an incredible position of arrogance.
True.
But I think to introduce people to other resources and to have that kind of generosity toward my audience and toward the other resources that are out there is also very important.
And we've talked about this before. I love being a curator of content.
Me too.
That gathers really great content from multiple sources and providing that to my audience. That's a wonderful thing. That's a wonderful service to provide your audience.
Well, you know, it's funny. The only guest I've ever had on my podcast was Gary Vaynerchuk when he came out with his new book. And one of the things he said to me was, he said, you know, you got to view yourself, I think he actually says this in his book, but you got to see yourself almost as a DJ.
Uh-huh.
You know,
I remember
your job
him saying
is
that.
To find the hits and play them for your audience. I think that's a good metaphor.
Yes, I loved that interview, by the way, and I loved it when he said that. I thought that's absolutely right. All right, thanks for your question, Aaron. Jim Ryan called in, and he said this, I found your podcast right after you uploaded your first one and have been listening ever since. By the way, Jim, thank you. We're so grateful.
Yes.
With all your success, you must experience a lot of judgment as well, maybe from yourself as well as others. I struggle with it as well, so how do you manage it?
Wow, that's such a great
question.
That could
be a whole episode.
It could be a whole episode. Yeah, in fact, I just had one this morning. And I had said something in a blog post earlier this week, and somebody was just incredulous at what I had done. I won't tell you what it is. But and I thought, you know, you have no basis for judging me. You have no context for that. And unfortunately, we live in a world where everybody has a microphone. And they also can hide behind sort of the curtain of anonymity.
Yes, true.
So there's no accountability. So they can say things that they would never say to you face to face, but they can leave a blog comment or say post something on social media or send you an anonymous email. And it stings. And I know lots of bloggers, lots of platform builders, lots of leaders that get very discouraged by that and they want to quit. but that just comes with the territory. And I think really the intention of that is for our good. And I've certainly grown through it. It's still painful when it happens, but I have gotten a thicker skin over time. Mm-hmm. I always want to hear the truth in it. You know, in other words, if somebody offers a criticism, and even if it's harsh, even if it's not delivered, you know, like I would like it to be delivered, as gentle as I'd like it to be and all that stuff, I still have got to ask myself, is there some grain of truth in there? Is there something that I need to listen to and I don't want to miss it? And having said that, I'm not going to it's not going to keep me from moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
It can't.
I had somebody recommend to me one time not to look at individual comments, instead look at patterns. Look for patterns.
Yes, that's a very, very good advice.
Look for patterns of affirmation as well as criticism. And when you see a pattern, that deserves your time and attention to pay attention to. Now, just because there's a pattern doesn't mean you have to beat yourself up and berate
right.
yourself for it. It's just learning. It's just
Absolutely.
A learning opportunity.
Well, and I actually said this in my book platform, but I divide this audience, these into friends, critics, and trolls, kind of that framework.
Yes.
So you have your friends who really love you and they want what's best for you, and they have the courage occasionally to sit down with you and deliver to you something that you maybe don't want to hear, but you need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Those are friends, and those people need to be affirmed. They need to be loved. And as a leader, you need to create an environment where it's safe for dissent so people can share that honestly, so you don't miss the benefit of it, because it can really keep you from stubbing your toe to maybe making an enormous blunder. Then you've got the critics. These are people that don't hate you. They're not out to destroy your life. They just disagree with you.
Which is okay.
It's
Guess
okay.
what? You're allowed to
There's
disagree.
There's room for that too. And I have my critics, and sometimes I read their stuff and I go, you know, they got a point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I did miss that. Then you got the trolls. And these are the people that...
Which, by the way, I just like the name that you give them, just so I can say...
You
just
kind of imagine it?
It actually just makes me smile. It makes me feel better about them, calling them little trolls.
Little trolls. Puts them in their place. But these are people who just have access to a microphone, and they really are trying to injure you in some
yes.
way. They're trying to say something that's hurtful. And I get those almost every day, too, and I just blow them off. I disregard them.
Well, there's no, you know, those that have your best intent in mind can bring criticism because you know that they're ultimately trying to achieve
yes.
the best for you and for the overall good of what's happening. But trolls have no desire for your best
they
intent.
Don't.
They just want to stir up drama, stir up trouble, create friction, make a scene, whatever.
Well, I got to confess to a guilty pleasure. So,
oh no! Did y'all hear that? Michael Hyatt is confessing to a guilty pleasure.
Well, sometimes people will leave this long, unwarranted criticism. You know,
uh-huh.
it's obviously a troll. And like, I don't delete critics from my blog. If there's somebody that is thoughtful and respectful,
uh-huh.
and they offer criticism,
I've seen it happen many times.
It, yeah.
uh-huh.
And so I leave it. But when somebody's a troll, my guilty pleasure is just hitting that delete button and deleting the comment. You know, and I just think, okay, yeah, you've got power, you've got a microphone, until I discover your comment, and then it's gone.
You know, my dad used to always tell me that that any anonymous criticism, and this was back in the day when letters were written, because we didn't, you know, he told me this growing up, so we didn't have emails and computer and blog comments and things like that. He said, as long as somebody's willing to sign their name, it's worth reading.
Yes.
But if somebody's not willing to sign their name or at least be willing to engage in the conversation, throw it away. Don't even read it.
Absolutely.
And I've thought of that so many times. You know, what this whole conversation has done with me as well is kind of turn the tables where I look at myself and say, okay, now what am I?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of person am I being? Am I someone that if I have a criticism that I'm doing it with the kind of best intent or the best, I want the best result for the other person?
Yep.
Or am I just complaining and being negative and nasty? And
yeah.
I don't know.
Making it personal.
So even kind of dealing with the judgment that is directed toward me, it also helps me to hopefully avoid being that same in return.
Yeah.
We have to play nice on the playground, in other words, boys and girls, right?
We do. And we have to lead by example. And, you know, the whole goal of that kind of negative criticism is, I think, you know, maybe in a broader spiritual context, is to get you to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's resistance.
It's the resistance. And I'm just not going to do that.
It just...
You got to keep going.
Got to keep going and embrace it as just part of the process. I mean, it's just part of life. We're living with a bunch of humans. It's going to happen
right.
from time to time. It's going to be ugly from time to time. We just can't let every little thing like that cause us to get down and quit.
Well, and the thing you got to do, too, is I think in some ways you got to treat the flattery and the praise in the same way. I had a friend...
Oh, that's good advice right there, because that's true.
Well, my former business partner and former boss Robert Wagamuth, whom mm-hmm. you know. He used to tell me, he said, you got to treat praise and harsh criticism in the same way. You basically plow it under as fertilizer, but you don't focus on it.
Wow. That's good stuff.
So
I hope Robert's listening because that's very good advice.
But either one of them can distort your sense of reality. And so you just kind of got to take the highs and the lows and not pay too much attention to them. I mean, I enjoy the praise as much as anybody else. But if I let that just shape my worldview and my view of myself, I wouldn't grow. I'd get big head, all the rest.
Great question. I'm so glad we spent a little extra time on that. Laura Crosby called in, and her question is this. At what point is adding a newsletter to your blog a good idea? What are the benefits and what cautions do you have?
Well, it depends on what you mean by a newsletter. I call my email list and the blog post that I send out a newsletter, but it's really my blog being sent out via email. And that's probably the most common thing, and it's also the most effortless thing. It doesn't require much of me because once you get it set up, and I use MailChimp for this, every time and I don't want to get too geeky, but every time the RSS detects that there's a new post, it triggers an email as well.
Okay.
So that's the easiest way to do it. Now, there are other people who write a separate email newsletter that's different from what they post on their blog. So there's content that's exclusive to the newsletter.
That's what I do.
Is that what you do?
Yep. Once a month, I send out a newsletter. And it has kind of a log of all my blog posts from the month. So for those that don't want daily updates on my blog posts, they just get once a month with a list of the blog posts that I've done, plus an additional article that's exclusive to them.
Well, the value of that, and I think Jeff Goins does that, Chris Brogan does that, a number of bloggers do that. The value of that is that it gives people a reason to sign up for your email newsletter list because they're going to get content that they're not going to get just in the public space. So I haven't done that because I haven't felt like I need one more thing to create. So there's not a right or wrong answer to this, but I think it just depends on what you're trying to accomplish. And if you need an incentive to grow your email list, and all of us do, that's one way to do it. It's not the only way to do it. It's not how I do it, but it's totally legitimate.
And one of the cautions then, what you're saying is that don't feel like you have to do a newsletter just because somebody else is doing a newsletter. If it serves your purposes, great. If not, don't do it.
Well, and the thing I would say too is don't take on more than you can consistently deliver. You know, because it's very easy to make this commitment and say, you know, I'm going to create this newsletter and it's going to go out once a week and everything's great till week three
when you don't feel
the motivation to do it. And the same thing's true for blogging. But the way you build trust, well, let me back up. The way you create the kind of relationships where you can monetize your blog or you can sell stuff is you create that trust. And the way you create trust is by being consistent and showing up on a consistent basis.
All right. Mark Andrews called in and said this. In episode 4 of season 1, you discussed strategies for building your email list. I'd appreciate your insights on best practices for terms of use and privacy statements for those who trust us with our email addresses.
Okay. True confession. I never pay attention to any of that stuff.
Well, you know, are full of confessions today.
I mean, honestly, for me at least, that's like the tail wagging the dog. And that's no disrespect to Mark. I mean, that's a legitimate question.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying I'm more focused on producing the content. There's probably lots of templates out there. Heck, I probably even have one, you know. But I just want to tell people I'm not going to sell their email address. I don't. I'm not going to barter to somebody else or let somebody else hijack it. I don't do that either. But beyond that, I really haven't done anything.
And you establish a relationship of trust over time, and even from the very beginning, they know what they can count on with you.
That's exactly right. Your behavior is going to create the environment of trust. I'll bet one person in 1,000 doesn't read the terms of use or the privacy stuff.
But they will watch what you do and how you handle yourself.
Now, I will say this. Maybe I don't think about it so much is because I have a separate email address that I use to sign up for email lists, to do business online.
Okay.
And I call that my bacon list, B-A-C-N. But it's where I don't mind getting, it's not spam, but it's stuff I've signed up for.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not going to reveal my private email address to that.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So I don't really care what they do with it if they end up selling it
all. So as a consumer, you don't necessarily pay attention to those privacy practices because you have that separate email set up anyway.
Yeah, and the truth is I can unsubscribe. I'm going to get a certain amount of spam. Google does a pretty good job of filtering that out. And everything else I've subscribed to and can unsubscribe to if I don't like it.
All right. Leslie Allenbach Alabach, I hope I said that okay, Leslie, said, I just transitioned from the automatic WordPress subscription to MailChimp, but I don't really know what I'm doing. Gosh, I've been there. I remember that. Where do you recommend I go to learn about pop-ups and subscriptions and that sort of thing? Do you have any resources you recommend?
Well, I would start with the MailChimp tutorials.
Oh,
they're remarkably
yes,
good.
They're excellent.
And I just had occasion...
And free. Free, easy to access.
And they're short, and they're mm-hmm. very function or feature specific. So if you're trying to solve a problem, they'll tell you exactly how to do that. That's probably where I'd start.
Okay.
And then, of course, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Platform University.
Of course.
Where we talk about this stuff all the time, all about pop-ups and building your email list, and that's just part of it, and that's at platformuniversity.com.
By the way, about how many members do you have at Platform U right now?
About 3,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's quite a university.
It is. It's a big university.
And I hear comments from them regularly. They're really enjoying it, getting lots of benefit out of it.
Yeah, I love it. I learn so much. I learn as much as I give.
That's great. Okay, River LaBelle called from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. She said, I love creating wow experiences for my clients, but I'd love for you to share how you avoid driving yourself nuts by constantly anticipating their response. How do you distinguish between people-pleasing and creating a wow experience?
Well, I delight in creating wow experiences, too. And just to define that, I think that's you create a wow experience anytime you exceed someone's expectations. So the first step is understand what they expect mm-hmm. and then become kind of a wow architect in creating an experience or creating a product that's going to exceed those expectations so that their mouth is left, you know, a jaw-dropping experience.
Yes.
Okay. So in terms of people pleasing, I am kind of a people pleaser by nature, but I don't think of it in the context of wow.
Maybe he's thinking in terms of making sure everybody 100% across the board is wowed. And that's just not even realistic.
It's not realistic. Absolutely.
I mean, we want to shoot for the majority of our audience to be wowed. But the truth is there's going to be one or two that aren't going to be happy no matter what you do. So if you have that expectation of doing 100% perfection, it's not going to work.
Well, because people come to your product, they come to you with their own histories and their own expectations. And some people have unrealistic expectations. And by the way, one of the things I try to do when I get into business with people is I want to know what their expectations are. Because if I detect at the beginning that their expectations are unrealistic, I'm not going to play.
Uh-huh.
And for example, I used to have this when I was in the publishing business, I'd have authors that would come that were expecting that somehow my company would make them famous. That's an unrealistic expectation. Yeah. I can't do that. I can give it that book, maybe it's day in court and get it out there and give it some mm-hmm. distribution, but ultimately the public's going to decide. And if their expectations were too far askew from reality, I just said, you know, pass.
It's just dangerous. I mean,
it is.
You just know it's a fail waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Asherita from Ohio called and said, I'm calling to ask about a behind-the-scenes aspect of monetizing a blog. Should I open a separate bank account for my blog? And if so, when would you recommend that I do that? And what tips do you have for keeping good records for tax purposes, et cetera?
Well, yes, I would not commingle funds in any case. In other words, if you've got any kind of business enterprise, even if you're not formally incorporated, like as an LLC or a S-Corp or something else, and again, we can get too geeky here, but I would still have a separate bank account,
okay.
even if you're doing business as this business entity.
As soon as possible?
As soon
or
as
do
possible.
You want to wait?
Well,
as
soon as you know that this is a really viable
okay.
venture, you know, as soon as you're making more money than your bank fees are going to cost you, I think it's worth doing.
Yes.
Because you want to be able to have expenses that are legitimate against that business, and you want to keep those things segregated. The IRS frowns on commingling,
mm-hmm.
and so you don't want your funds commingled.
Even if you don't have a separate business entity set up, still keep it separate?
Yes, because that's, you know, and I would set up a separate entity at some point.
That's a whole nother question. At what point do you set up another entity?
Yeah, there's a lot of different reasons. And again, I'm not an accountant, just to make this clear. I'm not a tax advisor.
Yeah, definitely meet with your, I actually had to have a meeting with my accountant recently to talk about this. It's worth a pretty lengthy discussion when it serves your purposes, when's the right time for you.
And there's tax considerations, there's liability considerations. You know, what you don't want to do is create something that is viable
mm-hmm.
and then get sued. And for that, you know, to come against you personally, you know, could be a problem. So there's a lot of different reasons to incorporate, but it's pretty inexpensive today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's worth doing. I personally have an LLC, several of them, in fact, and that's how I organize my business.
At the very least, you can have that separate bank account. That's a very simple thing to do, is set up that separate bank account. You could have a separate credit card for your business. You know, there's ways that you can at least separate those for now, which you can do immediately, and then start those conversations with an accountant or tax advisor or somebody to decide what's next.
And one of the big reasons, Michelle, to do that is just so you can track profitability, so that you can really optimize that business and make sure that it's worth the investment that you're making, both financially and in terms of your time.
And I would imagine you use some kind of bookkeeping software or have somebody that helps you do with that if that's not
yes.
you.
Yes. Well, I have an accountant that does that, and we use QuickBooks. And, you know, from my experience, that's probably the best solution. But there's a lot of people, you know, that use FreshBooks, and there's a lot of other people tend to be almost religious about this in terms of what they use.
True. But some kind of process. I mean, if you are really building a business, part of taking it seriously is taking these extra steps to make sure that you're running a good behind-the-scenes business as well as out front. All right, Jerry Granum. Jerry Granum called and said, how does an employee lead when he's not in charge? That's another episode. We need to do that one too. That's a good one.
Well, and as it turns out, leading, if you take the premise that leadership is influence, which is something that John Maxwell and others teach, and I subscribe to as well, then it really doesn't matter if you're in charge.
In fact, John Maxwell has a whole book on this called The 360-Degree Leader,
Leading
from Anywhere in the Organization.
And almost always in any organization, you're not the top guy.
Mm-hmm.
And here was kind of a wake-up call to me is when I became the top guy, I was the CEO. I went from having one boss, because I was reporting to the CEO, to suddenly I had seven bosses,
you have
my
board
members. And they all, you know, felt like I was accountable to them.
Uh-huh.
So there's almost no time when you don't have a boss. And so it has very little to do, though, with the influence that you exercise within the organization. Some of the most influential people ever in history were not people that had positions of authority. And we can all think of people that had the position that had very little influence in the organization because they were just, you know, knuckleheads.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two different things. Position and influence are two different things.
Good question, Jerry. I really like that question. Randy Vaughn called in and said that he's in the process of making an audio version of a blog post. I noticed that you include a transcript for your podcast episodes. I'm wondering if the opposite would also be helpful, to include an audio version of every blog post I write. Do you know of any tools, plugins, et cetera, that would help me do this?
Yeah, I actually experimented with this. I tried it for a month. I actually recorded myself reading the blog post and then posting that at the end of my blog post. And I think I used, and I may totally botch this, SoundHound.
Okay.
But it was a service where I basically read into it, and then it had a nice little WordPress embed.
And it was probably only a couple minutes long, right?
Yeah, it was only a couple minutes long. It did not move the needle at all. It didn't bring in more people. It just created more work for me. So I said, forget that.
So it may be something that his audience may want, or he may experiment with, or just decide based on your experience, not worth the time.
Here's the thing I've learned and I'm continuing to learn, and that is just because you can do it and because it's cool doesn't mean you ought to do it. Because if it doesn't move the needle, if it doesn't have an impact, if it doesn't benefit your audience, then it's just more work for you.
Allison said the following. I recently became a moderator of a writing critique group. Pretty quickly, a power struggle ensued. It was difficult, and we eventually had to part ways. For the future, what do I need to do to be a better leader in these types of situations where there's a power struggle within the group?
Well, I think probably in those kinds of situations, the way you deal with it is you head it off at the pass by having clear expectations on the very front end. You know, what is this group about? Who's going to be in charge? If anybody's going to be in charge, what are the rules of engagement? And I would do my very best to reduce that to writing. You know, it doesn't have to be a, you know, 31-page contract, but just a simple email that's the understanding of how this is going to work can go a long way. And try to anticipate the problems. This is the same thing that's true in business partnerships, any kind of relationship. I mean, you and I have a contract.
Yes.
So we know what our relationship is.
It's creating that alignment from the very beginning rather than getting halfway into it, then trying to create it when there's a power struggle.
That's
it just never works.
Alignment's a lot easier than realignment. Although I will say that even when you have alignment at the beginning, alignment is an ongoing work on the part of people who are in leadership.
Which requires communication and listening and investing in your relationships with the people
to the
that
relationship,
you work. Absolutely. We have time for one more question. Shmoliaf, I think I said that right, from Israel asked, how do you decide what content you give away for free and what you hold back for online courses or other products? I know you've said to give away your best content, but doesn't that end up shortchanging yourself in the long run?
It only does if you think that there's a finite amount of content that you have to offer. And I operate from a fundamental theory that the more you give away, the more you get. So in other words, Gail and I say to each other all the time, my wife Gail, we say to each other all the time, there's more where that came from.
Oh, I like that.
And so anytime we start feeling stingy or like we want to withhold something, we just say, no, there's more where that came from. And it's true.
Well, it creates this kind of generosity mindset.
It does.
And this plentiful, like, I don't have to hold back. I can give as much as I want.
You can. And that doesn't mean you should give everything away, but it means that you give away things for a different reason and you charge for a different reason. The reason I charge for some of the stuff I do, I mean, obviously I want to make a living, but I know that there's some content that people are not going to get the full value out of unless they pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and I are involved in several conferences together.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have both had the experience of giving people either a scholarship or letting them in for free. That's almost always a bad idea, isn't
almost,
it?
Almost. I'm trying to sit here and think of even one time where it worked well. I mean,
yeah.
It's very rare that that actually turns out as a positive.
I can think of one. I did think of one. But usually those are the people that cancel at the last minute.
Uh-huh.
They sleep in late. They don't come to all the sessions.
They
don't take notes when they're in the sessions.
They also tend to be fairly negative and complaining.
Yes. They have a lot of demands. But the people that pay for it are more invested.
Uh-huh.
So, and I'm not just trying to justify.
They're teachable. They usually come wanting to learn.
That's right.
They have more of this expectation of something positive rather than the sense of reluctance.
So I think there are reasons to charge that's in the best interest of the person that's actually paying.
But we don't have to be afraid that giving away is shortchanging us in the long run.
That's right.
I mean, really, it's okay to give away. In other words, you stand by your comment. You can give away your best content.
You can. And there's some content that I just, you know, maybe it's a series or I'm going to be investing a lot of production value, like a video series or something. And I want to charge for that because I want to recoup my investment. But I never think to myself, oh, that would make a great blog post. But I think I'll hold it back for this paid course that I'm going to do. Because the truth is, my blog for me is my workbench.
Uh-huh.
My podcasts are similar.
Mm-hmm.
So I test content, but it doesn't mean I can't reuse it and sell it as paid content. Another dirty little secret.
This is like the third or fourth time. Everyone, do you hear this? This is like a million-dollar episode here.
Almost all the content in my book platform was content that first appeared on my blog.
Yeah, it's true. It's good stuff.
And that's just where I test content. But people will pay for the convenience of having it organized in one place.
Uh-huh.
They're not going to go through my archives and my blog and spend all that time. So every speech that I give, that I get paid a lot of money to give, almost always starts as a blog post.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't reserve it, you know, for this paid.
No, you multipurpose it.
I multipurpose it.
Which is just smart business.
Yeah.
Well, we have gone through somewhere around 12, 13 questions in this one small episode. But we covered a lot of topics, which is why this is my favorite of all of our season episodes or all of our episodes each season. So thank you so much for being with us today. And if you've enjoyed today's conversation, you can get all the show notes as well as a complete transcript of the entire episode at michaelhyatt.com. If you prefer to watch instead of just listen, you can also catch the video at Michael's website. Again, that address is michaelhyatt.com. Do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, stay curious. You know, I think asking questions is one of the best ways to grow as a human being. Our lives are shaped by the questions that we ask.
Mm-hmm.
And so be intentional about it. Keep asking questions. It's a great way to grow as a human.
And we love hearing from you. So if you would like to leave a question, maybe we didn't tackle something that you were curious about today, go ahead and head on over to michaelhyatt.com and you can leave a question there, either voicemail or shoot us an email. Again, thank you for being with us. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters.